Good afternoon, Eastern Washington, and, well, welcome to Patriot Radio. But think about this. If you're not listening to Patriot Radio today, you're not going to know that. So if you get your friends and family out there, make sure that they do listen to Patriot Radio. They know about us because we also have a podcast on Podbean now. We archive our radio show on Podbean. You just type in Matt Shea, S-H-E-A on Podbean, and you can listen to Patriot Radio, even if you do miss us, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley. Once again, brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news, behind the news. And this is the year, once again, that we have made freedom a reality, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we have done it because the election results reflected that. Now it's our job to continue that work and do the hard work, not leave the fight, not go back home and go to sleep, and make freedom happen wherever we are. Local, state, and even national. In fact, there is a lot of buzz going on. I'll get to that here in a bit. A lot of buzz going on about who Trump is putting in his administration. And a lot of people don't know. It's like 4,000 positions that need to be filled there. So I'll get to that here in a second. But I do want to remind us, as I have for the last year, about Jeremiah 6:16, that we stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. A rebirth of freedom is what that means. A rebirth of freedom in Christ Jesus. And it really has to be the Holy Spirit working through us in every area of our lives. Wherever we show up, the Holy Spirit working through us. And we're cognizant of that fact. We don't have one life on Sunday and then another life the rest of the week. We're genuine people. And we let the Holy Spirit work through us in whatever situation we find ourselves in. And some situations can be kind of chaotic, but the Holy Spirit can guide us through. And that brings us to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, President Obama rebuked nationalism on his trip to Greece, literally saying that nationalism could cause tremendous problems in the world. And tried to conflate nationalism, I think, in alluding to it, but with racism. And we're starting to see that in the media right now, where they conflate the idea of America first with racist nationalism. And the Democrats have gone so far is not only to use Hitler comparisons. And it's interesting, if that had been done against Obama, and some people did, they got savaged in the media for even implying that. The Democrats want to go a step further. They want to say that Donald Trump is Stalinistic and compared the night of the elections to the night of the long knives. Now, I got to tell you something. For those of Jewish ancestry in this country, they should be up in arms over that. I mean, that is denigrating and diminishing the horrific things that happen to the Jewish people and others, Christians as well, in Europe. But when you start to see this labeling, you know, I mean, that the Democrats obviously have not learned their lesson that making fun of rural America and calling everybody that disagrees with them racist and misogynistic, you know, it's kind of funny. Some of those people I don't even think know how to spell misogynistic, but they also, I need to have my safe place. I need to not have anybody argue with me or show me, you know, primary source documents so I might learn the truth. When you start seeing this kind of thing happen, that means that they're losing. Okay, and what they didn't learn their lesson, that is exactly what Americans were sick and tired of all creeds and races. Now, by the way, I believe, just like Ken Ham puts out, there is one race, the human race. Okay, I want to be clear about that, but I'm using their terminology. I think that if you have if you have a person like that dividing a country, they are not having the best interests of all Americans at heart. And finally, Americans, you said, we want to be Americans again. We don't want to be this type of American or that type of American or, you know, labeled based on a perceived viewpoint. We want to be Americans again that believe in the Constitution, that it means what it says, that believe in freedom and liberty and the right to property and the ability to defend the same. That's what we want to be. And they rebuke this. And Obama going to another country next to another foreign leader and saying that, and basically rebuking his own country, clearly shows the Democrat Party has not learned their lesson. And they're going to continue to drive rural America away. And my guest today actually is going to be talking about rural America. Because rural America, like Thomas Jefferson predicted, would remain the repository of the values that made this country great. A lot of you don't know that. You can go actually look up some of the quotes from Thomas Jefferson, but he actually talked about the situation in Europe back in his time, where they were stacking and packing people in cities, and gradually the value systems, the Judeo-Christian value systems, eroded. And how the yeoman farmer, as Thomas Jefferson put it, would be this great repository of the values that make America great. And we saw it in the election. You saw the rural areas of the country say, no, we don't want it. We don't want it. You saw the people in rural America that have lost their jobs to China and Mexico say, no, we don't want it. And yet he's rebuking his own country overseas again. Also on the international front, the yuan, the Chinese currency, at its lowest level in 8 years. Why do you think that is? Well, it could be because China thinks they got some competition coming again. Interesting. Also on the international front, and this is really, for those of you that follow prophecy and follow what's going on in Israel, this one is really intriguing to me, at least. So the United Nations is wanting to change the Temple Mount to essentially Muslim, and not just in like practice, but actually in name. And Cheryl Hancock, who was on earlier in the week, talked about this. But one of the more intriguing things is, many of you have been paying attention to this show know that the third temple, the designs for it have already been completed. The accoutrements, the dress, the articles that would be in that temple have already been made. And that the Sanhedrin, which hadn't been convened for, I think, 1,000 years, if I read that article right, was reconvened. Well, now they took another step. They actually selected a Jewish high priest. So for the first time in a very, very long time, centuries, you are literally seeing unfold before your eyes this reconstruction of the temple and the priesthood that went along with it. Very intriguing. And the fact that the United Nations is now trying to turn the Temple Mount toward Muslim, both in name, they're actually changing the name, okay, but also in practice that no Jewish people can pray up there, although I think that's been violated several times. We're seeing this come to some loggerheads, it looks like. And many of you that follow prophecy are going to find that extremely intriguing. That's why I love having Cheryl Hancock on the show, because she is telling about what's happening on the ground in Israel that people just aren't seeing. Well, moving on to the national front, Trans-Pacific Partnership, Chuck Schumer, head Democrat, said that, well, TPP is dead. Now, in the House, there were Republicans still trying to keep it alive. I got to tell you something. If you're that tone deaf to America, I don't care what party you belong to. If you're that tone deaf to America, that the whole thing with NAFTA and CAFTA has completely failed, all the goals that they actually wrote into the documents, failed every goal there except for a couple. But particularly the goal on bringing jobs to America, and it's done the exact opposite. If you're that tone deaf, why are you still in Congress? You know, there's this Republican saying, oh, no, it's not dead. We're going to keep it alive. It's our job to keep. It is not your job to keep the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the so-called free trade deal, which is not about trade and it isn't free, alive. Your job is to protect and keep America independent. Now, I talk very often about how it's the purpose of government to protect our God-given unalienable rights, the life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. But there is another specific duty of government, and that is to keep us independent. And I remember there were some local business owners here in Spokane. I testified in favor of a resolution that would rebuke TPP before the Spokane Valley City Council. And there were a couple of businessmen that came up and said, we need trade. We have to have trade. No, and this is actually, it's a logical fallacy, and it's a deception, okay? This is intentional deception, because nobody said that we shouldn't have trade. What was said is that the deals that are going forward aren't free trade. It's not. And Art Thompson put it very well. He said it can't be free trade if government's involved. I thought that was brilliant. I really did. I thought that was brilliant. It can't be free trade if government's involved. But more so, people just want to have a level playing field of competition, and that just does not exist internationally right now. It is a fact that it doesn't exist. It's a matter of law that it doesn't exist. These free trade deals put America at such a great disadvantage that any sane person looking at it, if you were negotiating a deal between your businesses and somebody else's businesses, you'd be, no, I'm not going to be a part of that. It's putting me in a tremendous disadvantage. We're not going to do that. And yet, that's what these politicians try to say. And they're tone deaf to what America just rebuked. One of Donald Trump's big things was going against TPP. So keep your eye on that. And any Republican, I'm going to say this again, any Republican that supports the TPP is not supporting America and is not supporting the American worker or American jobs. It's just a fact. There's been study after study after study, and economic professors, they have come out and said with empirical numbers that these deals have put America at a disadvantage. They're largely responsible for not only for the jobs going overseas, but for our manufacturing sector going overseas, which is a geostrategic problem. If America cannot manufacture its own stuff. Now, I found out, you know, about high voltage transformers that they're made in South Korea, and it takes months for them to be made and then months for them to be shipped over here. You know, if you lost a couple high voltage transformers, you have power go down across part of the United States. What is not going to come back up for months because we don't have our own manufacturing? We have to understand that there is a group of people that profit from something called a barrier to entry. They profit from putting barriers up so other small businesses cannot compete. And these free trade deals, honestly, are like that barrier to entry, because what they're doing is they are making it so difficult to be in a particular field, particular industry, that only multinational corporations can compete. And that is not the American spirit. The American spirit is to have small businesses, massive competition at the local level, and not to have monopolies. You can tell I'm passionate about that issue, I'm sure. Also on the national front, Trump still, the rumors flying that he is going to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Now, there were some emails and some Facebook comments on this that, well, they already are a terrorist organization. Well, that's not true, actually. Hamas has been designated, which is an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, has been designated a terrorist organization, but the actual Muslim Brotherhood is not. And so technically they haven't, and this would be phenomenal if President Obama did that, because in the Holy Land Foundation trial, as a matter of fact, in law, after raiding a secret sub-basement, there was an explanatory memorandum that a judge found to be, as a matter of fact, in law, accurate and true, that there were a bunch of groups that are members of the Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States of America, including the Council of American Islamic Relations, and the North American Islamic Trust. Now, the North American Islamic Trust owns the mosque in Spokane Valley. The count, and also, I think, a mosque down in Kennewick, if I recall correctly. But the Council of American Islamic Relations is apologized for by the left constantly, even though they were on that list of unindicted co-conspirators. They were found in that Holy Land Foundation trial to be members of the Muslim Brotherhood and the U.S. Arm. So, why is this important? Because just a few days ago, one of the leaders of the Council of American Islamic Relations out of Los Angeles called for the overthrow of the U.S. government. And people say, well, no, he's kind of more implying it. Well, okay, he's implying the overthrow of the government. If that was, you know, some ranchers in Oregon, would they end up in... Well, wait a minute, they did. And they didn't even imply that. They just said, hey, we don't want the government intruding into every area of our lives. Well, here you have the Muslim Brotherhood being designated a terrorist organization. If Trump does that, that is going to implicate the Council of American Islamic Relations, North American Islamic Trust, and some other organizations as well, because their leaders are associated and have been found, as a matter of fact, in law, these organizations to be members of the Muslim Brotherhood. So keep your eye on this, but I just found it interesting that this CARE leader does this and the media, almost nobody reports on it. Unreal. On the national front, EPA nominee Meyer Nebel, who has spent most of his life really trying to figure out how to dismantle the EPA and put them toward what they, you know, put them toward what they should be doing, and that is nothing because they're unconstitutional. Mr. Ebel is being floated. That name is being floated as the nominee for the head of the EPA. And I got to tell you, there are other names being floated around. I'm going to break this on Patriot Radio today. There are other names being floated around in Washington State to be high up in the EPA leadership. And boy, wouldn't that be cool? Get some freedom fighters that understand the value of farmers, understand the value of ranchers as well in that agency. And hopefully that agency is dismantled, as it should be. Also on the national front, now this is an interesting story. So there's this guy who trespasses at a water treatment plant in Chicago, okay? And he's charged, and he's let go, and then he disappears. Now, he walked in there with a duffel bag, for goodness sakes. So clearly it's a probing incident. The guy disappears, which confirms that that's probably what it was. That's national security malpractice, folks. It's almost like they want these people to go away. It's weird and get away with this stuff. Unreal. Also on the national front, interesting that the Democrats are now floating a new head of the Democrat National Committee, an avowed Muslim. A lot of blowback for that idea, but again, kind of the tone-deaf thing. You know, I need to say as a caveat there that, you know, I have helped Muslims immigrate. In fact, one family in particular immigrate from Iraq through Syria to the United States of America because they helped at one of our bases over there. And he is a true man of character. His daughters and his wife, very wonderful people. But I think the fact of the matter is that when you have people that are tied to the Muslim Brotherhood or apologists for their U.S. organizations that have been named in the Holy Land Foundation trial, I think we have problems. And I think that's what everybody's concerns are. It's this massive infiltration. And, you know, you talk to this friend of mine, you talk to him and he wanted to come to the United States because there wasn't the violence, because there wasn't the beheading and all of that stuff. And so I recognize fully that there are people out there that want to come here for that reason. And in his case, he was very thoroughly vetted because he had to come from a U.S. base. He worked with soldiers for for a period of months. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're talking about the reality of the situation. But the fact of the matter is there are a lot of these people inside the Democrat Party that are affiliated, apologists for, associated with the Muslim Brotherhood organizations that have been listed in the United States of America in the Holy Land Foundation trial. And that's a problem, folks. It's a problem. And I know Donald Trump has been briefed on this, and I look forward to seeing what he's going to do to root out members of the Muslim Brotherhood from the administration, all levels of government, and also the communist subversives that are there as well. On the national front, lastly, and this is a story that really kind of made my blood boil, back in the Korean War, now this also was, there was some thought that this might have happened in the Vietnam War as well, okay? But in the Korean War, there were POWs and people that were ended up being missing in action that the Pentagon now says were not taken to Russia for interrogation and then eventually to the Gulag Archipelago, Archipelag Gulag in Russia. Now, the Pentagon officials said that there's no evidence that U.S.-Korean War POWs were taken to the Soviet Union. Okay? Now, this is despite the fact there have been multiple eyewitness testimony of seeing American POWs in the Gulag, seeing them transported. There's detailed information from several different sources on this as well. To say there's no evidence is a slap in the face to every family that has POW or MIA family member that could have been taken to the former Soviet Union during that war. And in fact, there was a commission that just by 1996, and this is in this article on the Free Beacon. Great, by the way, if you don't know about the Free Beacon, go to the Free Beacon website, get their emails. Great reporting from the Free Beacon. All right. There was a report specifically in 1996 that said, quote, collected a significant amount of information that suggests there's a high probability that during the Korean War, American POWs were transferred from Korea to the Soviet Union, end quote. And yet the Pentagon is saying that there's no evidence. There's also circumstantial evidence that they went there as well. Folks, we cannot rest until we bring every single soldier, sailor, airman, and marine home, period. And just saying there's no evidence when that's just clearly not true, kind of, I guess, giving up, that's the wrong answer. Makes my blood boil when I read that. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, also on the regional front, so the and this was a really kind of interesting story. So there's a lot of rioting centralized around Portland, Oregon. And apparently the majority were not even registered to vote or didn't vote in the election, but they're rioting because this is really AstroTurf. You know how they try to project that onto us through Tea Party movement? This is actually real AstroTurf. And we saw this over on Craigslist in Seattle. They literally were hiring full-time activists to go to these different things. And then you had several reports that had pictures from back east where they showed buses where these people were bussed in. So this is not spontaneous, folks. This is total disinformation and deception that there's some big popular outcry. The fact of the matter is Donald Trump won. All right, also on the regional front, this anti-Christian politician in Oregon, Brad Avakian, was defeated. Now, he was the guy that went after, okay, the Christian Baker's sweet cakes down in Oregon for not wanting to create a wedding cake for a lesbian couple, okay, exercising their right of conscience, their God-given unalienable right of conscience. So he was defeated in Oregon, and quite a, you know, kind of a bright spot. I would hope that we have a great candidate for Attorney General next time, maybe beat Mr. Ferguson, who is just as radical as Mr. Avakian. Also on the regional front, and another great bit of news coming out of the 19th Legislative District down in Pacific and Wakayakum counties, Jim Walsh has won that race. He is the first Republican that has been elected there in decades. You heard that right, in decades. And that is an example of the Liberty Movement on the march and reaching out to workers in rural areas like that, especially loggers that had lost their jobs to China, Mexico, in some cases Canada too, especially in the logging industry. So, Jim Walsh, congratulations. Now, in the 30th Legislative District, we have lost, it looks like, one seat for sure. There's another race, Terry Hickel's race, which is still in the balance. So there is still a possibility that the House of Representatives in Washington State could go to a tie. And I know it's over a week since the election, but that's the truth. So keep praying for Terry Hickel in that race over in the 30th District on the west side of the state. On the local front, the Roy Murray trial has started. It's the man that's alleged in that triple homicide up in North Spokane. And when this is done, I will be able to break some personal news in regards to this entire thing that should shed a lot of light on some things that have been going on in regards to that trial. Very interesting. They started opening statements, and very stark contrast. And a lot of experts that are watching this trial are saying that this is going to be a battle of the experts to try to get a conviction. Also on the local front, the media continue. This is the mainstream media continuing to lose. We're seeing it all over the country. Massive drops in subscribership, viewership. TV and print media just, I mean, really tanking. Everything seeming to go online. And it's interesting to notice that when people do go online, they start to wake up. And they search for the primary source documents themselves. They go to those individual documents. They read them. People start to wake up. And that's really what we saw happen during this election. We saw people waking up after they read those primary source documents. So try to get your family members to read them too. You know, don't, instead of getting in an argument with them, just say, hey, have you read this document? For example, Fate of Empires by Sir John Glubb. Great analysis of history and the cycles of history. The Fourth Turning, another one. Have you read those things? And have you read the actual physical letter from Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptists, where this supposed wall of separation of church and state comes from? Have you actually read his second inaugural address? Have you actually read the debates of the Constitution, the notes, the actual what was said, the speeches? Those are the kind of things that once you read them, there is no other answer than freedom and liberty. There just isn't. And the media has tried its level best to, and a lot of the universities, honestly, have done this too, to dumb down and make it so Americans don't want to read that stuff and just take my word for it. And that's how people get lied to. And I remember when I first woke up and I was reading a primary source document and I just went, wait a minute, I've been lied to my entire life. And I was so angry about it. Help your friends and family with that by giving them the primary sources as well. All right. I do want to mention this weekend, there's a special opportunity for young people here in Spokane. We've got the Northwest Liberty Academy, and I'm actually going to be speaking at it. The Northwest Liberty Academy is coming to Cabela's in Spokane this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. I'm going to be speaking around, I think, 2:30, if I see the calendar right here. But it's a great opportunity for young people to get what's called a crash course in free enterprise and entrepreneurism. Cabela's, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday. Parents, you can go shopping. Dads, you can go shopping at Cabela's while your kids get to learn about the free enterprise system and how to become an entrepreneur. Again, Cabela's this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And that is the Northwest Liberty Academy. I think it's $10 for an individual, which is very, very cheap. And I got a lot of great speakers that are going to be there as well, including Representative Heather Scott, Lawrence Denny, the Idaho Secretary of State, a great man and a friend, and Steve Ackerman, professor of economics as well. So look forward to seeing some of you at least there. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. And thank you to everybody that has prayed for us and gone to the Facebook page and made it go over 2,000. Thank you to everybody that's done that. And continue to share it with your friends and family. And remember, we do podcast this. So if you miss the replay at 9 o'clock tonight, you can get the podcast on Matt Shea Podbean as well. And I just got a text message from a listener. That is Cabela's in Post Falls at the Idaho border, okay? Just to make sure everybody knows what I'm talking about. Also, this is a listener-supported show. Make sure if you get a chance and you feel led to, go to VoteShea.com and help keep us on the air. And, you know, it's going to take all of us to keep this message out. And talk radio and the internet has completely revolutionized politics because it's getting people awake again. So help us keep people awake through Patriot Radio. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce my guest today, Tamara Smith of Smith Family Farm, and we were talking about rural America. I wanted to get somebody on here from rural America to talk about the importance of rural America and that it's not just a bunch of big scary hillbillies or something as the left tries to paint us. So, Tamara, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio.
Yes, sir. Hi, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, if you can, tell us a little bit about Smith Family Farm.
Smith Family Farm, we're working on our third year now. It's pretty small. We live on 2 acres, and we just were able to purchase another 2. So we have 4 acres right in the middle of a nice little community. And we have all sorts of animals. We have 5 little kids. And we're raising small animals while our kids are small. And when they get big, we'll raise some bigger animals.
I love it. Well, yeah. Why is that so important? I mean, you use the term family farm. Why is that so important to America? You know, Thomas Jefferson talked about the idea of farms and ranches keeping and being a repository for the values of America. Can you enlighten us on that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, basically it connects us to the earth, which reminds us of who made the earth, and so it brings us closer to God. There's no way for me to plow the ground, plant a seed, and harvest that crop and not know that there was a God involved in doing that. And so it brings me closer to him and to his creation. You can learn all sorts of life lessons that are instantly learned. You learn that if you don't take care of it, it doesn't grow, or if you don't harvest at the right time, you lose your crop. And, you know, I also feel like it brings people together. People want to know what they're eating. Too many children think that food comes from the store, and that's one of those lies that you were talking about. It's a lie. It's not true. It doesn't come from the store. And I just want to keep that flame going in America.
I love that. And I think that there are many listeners out there right now that are on farms, they're on ranches, they're in the woods logging, mm-hmm. that are thinking, that's exactly right. You learn so much just by being out in nature, by being out there and watching birth happen. And more importantly, I think in some respects, watching death happen too.
Yes, yes, that's huge. That is so important. You know, in early America, the two most valued men in those small communities was the preacher and the butcher, because I think that the preacher, because of the incredible example I've had of the pastor in my life, he sees from the depths of the sin that people come from, which really is the muck and the mire, and what it takes for them to get on the straight and narrow and walk that road toward glory. It's the same with an animal. We just harvested a hog this morning, and he was the most beautiful animal, gorgeous, did his job. He grew to the right, you know, the right weight, and we processed him. And it's a heavy thing. We don't just love the guts and the glory. It's not even a hunt involved. It's a harvest of an animal that met its destiny. And we pray over the animal. We thank that animal for what it's doing for our table. And I think that's a lost art in America. And our founders knew the value of a homestead and what it needed to bring, and what their women and children needed while they were off defending our country.
Well, I'm sure you've had a moment where one of your kids has seen something and just said something kind of profound, or had a profound effect on them. Could you share one of those examples for our listeners? Because I love those. I love those examples.
Oh, my kids are, you know, they're funny. I had them all really close together as five, and then, you know, they're 11 and 9, and my twins just turned 7, and my baby's 5. So, you know, they're out there with me more. And I fight for the chores. I want to do them. I want to find the chicks in the morning, and I want to find the piglets that are born, you know? So they're keeping up with me. And I think that's really important, because as parents, if we don't do and want and love what we're doing, they won't either. That you can tell them, go do your chores. Get out there and do your chores while I'm, what, on the computer or messing with my phone? No. Come on. Let's go get the eggs. Let's see who's laying today. Let's make sure no one's acting funny, because if they're acting funny, it means they're hurt or they need to be moved or rotated or things like that. But one thing my children do, we have family prayer in the morning, and we always start out with, God, thank you for this. And I love it, because they say, thank you for the baby pigs. Thank you for the ducklings. Thank you that Hamlet started laying again, because her nest was attacked and she was traumatized, but she got over it and she was able to lay again. And it's these precious, simple things in life that my children value. And I want them to, because God values those things.
You know, it's amazing how much they can pick up just from just being there, yes. Just experiencing yes. It.
Yeah. To be dirty, to be bloody, to see, this was fun. We had a big poultry harvest with the community, and I think we processed 72 birds or something, and the smallest one was under a pound. It was one of those little bantam roosters. And the biggest one was this turkey that was 51 pounds, big old white turkey, and they named him Douglas. The neighbors brought him over in a wheelbarrow because he was so heavy. And, you know, we spent the whole day just taking life and preserving life. And it was such a beautiful process. And then in the evening, of course, you know, some of the people can't even eat what they process. It grosses them out. But we had duck for dinner, and it was the most amazing duck tacos you've ever had.
So, yeah, they taste better, don't they?
What we're growing.
Well, I think that kind of dovetails into another part of this, and that's work ethic. You know, when I was growing up, I was 6 years old. My dad had me and my brother out in the woods, and we were running along the top of logs and marking the logs so the guys with the chainsaws could come by. How does this foster work ethic?
It's just not hard. I think I grew up in a small town, but not, well, I was 12 when I moved to this community. But before that, it was kind of, there were no chores. Sort of, okay, clean the bathroom, clean your room, go to your room, go outside, you know. And now it's so seasonal. The kids know that we need firewood in, and we need it now. So my boys are 7 and 5, and they're out loading up firewood in the morning. And they love it, because dad's there. That's what they do. And they know that they have to get it in that shed, because if they don't, then they can't actually go get it when the snow's here and it's time to bring in the firewood to use it. And I love the work ethic. There's, you know, on my front porch, there's just this row of rubber boots. That's all they wear this time of year is rubber boots, because it's so dirty. And I love it. And they're proud of it. And they do learn to work. This is one thing I told my kids. Okay, we're going to go pick some berries. The neighbors have this beautiful raspberry patch, and we weeded it, so we get to go pick from it. Great. They're all excited, and they get their buckets, and we're going across the field. And I said, guys, you're excited now, but it's going to get hard. And when you are hot and it's sticky and there's bees and you think you don't want to do it anymore, that's when you push through. That's when you push through and you keep picking, because you're building character. So, okay, yes, Mom, okay, whatever. So we're picking along, and my 7-year-old daughter, Sally, she says, Mom, I feel the character. Because it's not fun. Hard work is not always fun.
Well, it's not. And you're actually alluding to something else, and that's the idea of selflessness, that you do keep working because somebody else is depending on you, and you actually have to think about other things and people besides yourself.
Yeah, and I also tell my kids, and I homeschool them, and I co-op with a lot of my awesome friends out there that are also doing the same thing. We work together, but I spend a lot of time with kids, and I tell them, you know, this isn't about you, and I'm not going to make your education fun. I don't have to work hard to make your education fun because you are kids, and you have fun all the time. It doesn't matter what they're doing. They're going to have fun. And I think Americans feel like we have to get the best programs or the best games or the best learning things when our children, at the core of who they are just going to have fun no matter what they do. So why don't we spend more time teaching them how to work and sweat and put on a skill instead of just teaching them to feel good about themselves, which I know you could probably take 20 minutes from here and go on self-esteem in America, well, but it's a shame.
Well, I think that the issue for me is that you have this group of people in America, and it's not just one generation. I mean, it cuts across generations.
Yes,
that
yeah.
feels like they're entitled to get something without working for it. And I just yes. that really bothers me. But on a farm, you can't do that.
No, heavens no. And you know what's kind of hard, Matt, is that I love these animals. And so, you know, when my 11-year-old daughter doesn't want to do the chores in the house because she wants to be outside with me, I had to tell her, no, I care so much more about these animals than anything in that house. I mean, except you. I love you. But no, you need to earn this right to take care of these animals, because if you don't feed them, and you don't water them, and you don't move them, you don't rotate them, they're going to suffer. And that's on us, because God told Adam, name them, steward them, govern them. And we are Adam's lineage, and that's our job. And I think they're believing me, because they're doing a lot better job on their chores in the house.
I love it. Well, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about, you know, what is it like running a family farm with the current regulatory environment that we enjoy, or actually we don't enjoy here in Washington State.
Yeah. You know, we haven't branched out too much beyond where we are. Our hope is to have a business and to be able to provide something that's quality and that is farm to table, really. But I'm a little nervous about that, and I'm asking God to just direct us and show us how to do that without getting tangled up with the bureaucracies and all the laws and the rules and things. I want it to be simple, and I'm sure want it to be simple. Can we just sell them turnips and trade them something? You know, can we just do it that way? No, because your drains aren't up to code, and because you're water tested this, and because blah blah blah, you know. But I'm going to learn, because I'm unwilling to keep this to myself. I want this to spread in our area and where we are, and I want it to be a ministry that touches other people. I don't want it to be just my perfect little world. That's not who God's called us to be.
No, it is not. I talk on this show quite a bit about preparation and about thinking ahead.
Yeah.
And, you know, farmers throughout history, ranchers throughout history, loggers throughout history never had a problem. Or if they did have a problem, it was significantly mitigated because they just have a lifestyle of preparedness. And I'd like you to talk about preparedness as an idea. And then also the fact that you guys have Muscovy ducks, if I'm not mistaken. And I love Muscovy ducks because they're quiet and they are great, hardy little birds. So if you can, talk about both of those things.
Awesome. You don't want to get me started on my ducks, because I love them and I talk forever. So I'll touch the other the topic first. You know, I harp on, because I have been taught, discipled, and trained very specifically that it's a lifestyle. The Hebrew people throughout history, the pilgrims throughout history, they had a lifestyle of self-sustainability. And when you find yourself reliant on someone else for anything, you really have to question that and decide, can I live with that or can I not live with that? And I teach my children, my husband and I both do, intentionally, that we don't want to depend on other people for what we have, but we always want to have more than we need. because as God's people, we should have a storehouse. I have this great vision for this living storehouse on the, you know, on the church grounds where it's living. It's a thriving chicken coop with eggs and meat birds, and it's berries and fruits and vegetables, and people can come to God's people and actually get a basket of fruit, a basket of food, and through that they'll feel God's love. And I want that with my farm. I feel like sustainability is, it's an endless education. I've got this pressure cooker and I'm looking at it going, oh my gosh, it's the best ever made. Someone bought it for me for Christmas last year, and I'm just afraid of it, you know? But I can water bath anything, and I can dehydrate, and I can freeze, and I can, I've made all sorts of wonderful things. So, you know, it's a tough road. It's just hard work to be prepared, but you have to do it, and you have to prepare for more than yourself. I think that's just the way it needs to be.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I love the way that you said, you know, you're able to share God's love by being prepared, because we really can't love our neighbor if government's doing it for us. And if we have that opportunity to share food, we can say, you know, this is from Jesus. Let me tell you about him. I love that. So anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah, and you know what I tell people too is, you know, 3 years ago, my husband sustained a traumatic brain injury that should have killed him. It really should have. And you know, here we are with five little kids and winter's coming on, and not once did I have to go to the state for help, not once, because the community and the church and my family helped get us back on our feet. And we're back on our feet, and that is a huge testimony. And there's no way to replace that, but that is the truth of it. And there's no way to change that. And we're back on our feet, and we're moving forward, but I love telling people that I never needed food stamps, I never needed financial subsidies, I never needed my power bill covered, because God's people actually paid those bills. You know, they actually brought food to my house. They went school shopping for my kids. That's the way that's supposed to go.
Well, this is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Tamara Smith of Smith Family Farms, talking about why rural America is so important. And I do want to give you a couple minutes to talk about the Muscovy ducks and why they might be a better option than chickens. Yeah. I love them. So go ahead.
I do too. I didn't know you liked them. That's wonderful. Okay, so I say Muscovy, and if you actually are on Facebook and you're on the Scovy page, you call them Scovies. So I don't know if that's right or not, but Muscovy ducks are They're in between a duck and a goose, and so they don't have the quacking and the need for the water and things like that. They hiss, and they're very quiet, and they perch at night. So they're very smart. They perch, so they're not caught by their predators. And they grow to great big sizes in short amount of times. So we'll have a young drake. Well, we just ate one the other night that was 7 months old, and he was, you know, 12 pounds. And they're very friendly. And they love to be mamas. So the females go broody really young. And I usually have 5 or 6 hatches in the spring. And last year I had 57 ducklings that were just running all over the place. And they love to eat bugs and grasshoppers and flies and all sorts of things. So they're just a wonderful bird to have, especially if you have neighbors close by, because they don't quack and they're very polite.
Well, I love the part that they are limited in their noise. I mean, I don't think a lot of people know that. They do not quack.
No, they don't. People don't even know they're ducks. And some people think they're ugly. They told me, ooh, they're ugly, because they have this mask, and the mask is called caruncle. And the older they get, the more gnarly and bumpy that red mask gets over their eyes. And my kids think it's because they're superheroes. Why would they not have a mask? I mean, look at them. So, They're not what you normally think. But you know what? Neither are you, and neither am I, and neither are all of us. We all have our own beauty, and a Muscovy is a gorgeous animal that everyone needs to have. And once you get two, you're going to get 500, because they love to have babies. Oh, and we eat the eggs. Their eggs are wonderful. They're very good.
Well, and I've also been impressed by the fact that in the wintertime, they can have babies and no problems. The babies are hardy. You don't have to do anything extra with it. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah, and there's always a loss, and that's what, you know, we were talking about earlier. There's I never thought I'd see so many dead little ducklings or little piglets or little chicks, and that's the loss, and it's sad, and I want it to be sad. I want it to make me sad every time. I don't want it to be something I get used to. However, there is a loss, but, you know, that mama Muscovy, she'll sit on 21 eggs, and she'll hatch them out and maybe lose two ducklings. And wow. Then she'll just, boy, she will take care of them, and don't you ever touch those babies. And they're just the cutest thing in the whole world, these little balls of fluff, and they're just a delight, absolutely amazing.
Well, in the last couple minutes that we have left, you know, kind of, you know, after this election is kind of like, where do we go from here? But I want to kind of focus maybe on thinking generationally. What is your perspective on how we should, as Americans, think generationally instead of just kind of what's immediately in front of us and this immediate gratification culture we live in? How do we think generationally? What would be your perspective on that?
You know, Matt, I had someone real special in my life, and I think he's 84 this year. And he told me, Tammy, he's the only one in the world that can call me Tammy. He said, always look forward and always look behind you. And whether you get along with kids or have a special gifting with children or teens or babies or whatever it is, learn. Just learn how to look into the eyes of the child and give them something and give them hope and give them a reason to live. Teach them how to work. Let them know you're proud of them. You're proud of this America. But learn how to connect with that teen. Learn how to connect with that toddler, that child, whatever it is. Don't just soldier on ahead. You're not going to take that with you. It has to be for the kids. And it has to be small communities, tight families. I don't know. I'm so spoiled living where I live and having what I have. I've had it since I was 12. I have such an identity of who I am and why I'm here. And so will my children. So we are building. I'm second generation, and my children are third. So we are doing it, and it's just hard work, determination, and a lot of hope and a lot of trust that God is not going to leave us, and he is not going to just watch us walk around that mountain over and over. He's really going to take us in to the promised land.
Amen. Amen to that. Well, yeah. If people want to get a hold of you or maybe check out Smith Family Farms or just get, you know, just talk to you about their own experience, or maybe they just want to start down this road and they want to talk to you about how to do it, where can they go to get a hold of you?
You know, all I have is an email account. It's, what is it? FarmSmith. Yeah. FarmSmith@gmail.com. FarmSmith. Because, you know, the Smiths were the ones that did all the work in those early communities, the goldsmiths and the blacksmiths and such. So we are farm smiths, and I'll do my best. Like I said, you know, we're nothing real fancy at all. We're just a lot of love right now, a lot of hard work.
Well, I think you've got a lot more wisdom than you might give yourself credit for as well. It's just been terrific having you on the show today, and I'd love to have you on again sometime. You know, early spring, and talk about this sure. In more detail as well.
Yeah, let's do that. I would love it. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Take care and God bless. Tamara Smith, Smith Family Farm, talking about the importance of rural America. Now, if you were not encouraged by what you just heard, message me, because that should be encouraging to everybody that's listening. This is how America survived and thrived for literally decades and decades and decades. And it is a real simple solution of getting out, getting dirty, learning about life at the earliest age you possibly can, and learning that work ethic and that selflessness. That's where it comes from. And I really want to go back to Thomas Jefferson, who said that the yeoman farmer, that was going to be the repository of the values that made this country great. And he was saying it at that time. You know, it would be the repository of those Judeo-Christian values. And I think it's becoming that again. And that's one of the reasons it's so important to be involved in the fight, especially on the land use issues and the regulations, because our farms and ranches that are consolidating, that's not a good thing. We should have more smaller farms. We should have small track agriculture, whether that's a vineyard in Green Bluff, or a wheat field, or maybe growing industrial hemp, whatever. We need to have those small farms. And that was so important to the strength and the vitality of America. We need to get back there again. And so I hope you enjoyed hearing that perspective from somebody that just has a passion for it. And we're going to have her on again. I know we will. Well, I do want to mention, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I talk a little bit about this. I want to end the show with Donald Trump and his picks right now for cabinet, that he's going through this whole vetting process. And there's a lot of stuff that is going on in the media and all the scuttlebutt. Here's one thing to keep in mind. The best leaders are able to bring their team of rivals together to do some dramatic change in a country. They're able to bring people that they disagreed with onto their team so they could hear their perspective and their opinion and go with the best thing forward. That's kind of an American thing. So don't get caught up necessarily in a lot of the scuttlebutt that's out there, because I think a lot of that's kind of disinformation at this point. But there are people here in Washington State that are being looked at to be part of the Trump administration, and these are freedom fighters, and you know, pray about that. Pray that he would choose godly men and women, people of character that love the Constitution of the United States, to be in his administration from wherever they come across this great land. Well, this is Matt Shea, and once again, thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio. Remember to pray for a revival of repentance, that awakening that we want to see. And make sure, if you get the chance, do everything that you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.